This week on Art of the Air, we feature an off-Broadway playwright, Taylor Tash, discussing his new musical, Night Tide, coming to Toll Theater. Next, we feature new country music sensation consisting of identical redheaded triplets, Taylor Red, appearing September 15th in Munster. Our spotlight is on LaPorte County Symphony's Tim King discussing The Hoosier Star on September 11th.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome to Art on the Air someone who's been with us many times on the spotlight segment here, Tim King of the LaPorte County Symphony. He's going to be bringing us up to date on what's coming up this fall, where there's lots of things, but most of all, what's coming up with Hoosier Star. Tim, welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back here again.
Aloha.
Hi there.
You've got lots of things going on there, but let's first talk about the next thing coming up in September, the Hoosier Star.
Right. It's our 16th annual Hoosier Star. Whoever thought we would be doing this for 16 years, but the talent is still out there and it's still fantastic. As most people know, Hoosier Star is essentially a voice competition of amateur singers who probably will be singing in front of an orchestra for the first time in their lives. And every year we have auditions in March of every year. And we have this on the second Saturday of September. So it's Saturday, September the 11th at 7 p.m. at the Civic Auditorium in LaPorte. And we have 10 finalists, five in the youth division, which is 17 and under, and five in the adult division, which is 18 and over. We actually have a couple of people that have been in the competition before. We have a young lady by the name of Grace Phillips, who was a finalist in the youth division last year. And one of our past youth winners from South Bend is actually an adult now. So she's going to be trying out the adult portion of it. This is the first time we've had a youth winner actually coming into the adult. But we've already had a couple of rehearsals with a small combo with all of these finalists. Their songs have been chosen. We've been rehearsing with them. And starting next week, Alistair Willis, who is the music director of the South Bend Symphony, is guest conducting with us again. Mm-hmm. And he's going to come over and lead the orchestra. And we'll be rehearsing with each of these 10 finalists and the songs that we've chosen for them. I'm really, really happy with the quality that we have this year. We had 21 communities that were represented in the auditions. We have six communities that are represented in the finals. And as far away as New Albany, Indiana, which is 5 hours away from here. So we're really are getting the name out there across the state of Indiana, and I'm really glad to see that.
Tim?
Yes.
Tim, is this the first year there hasn't been a male adult competing?
That is correct. That is correct. We are female heavy this year. That is correct. Joseph Giuliani, some people might remember the Giuliani family. Some really tremendous singers. Joseph and his sister Afia are youth finalists again this year. This is Joseph's third time being a finalist. He started out as a boy soprano And then voice started changing. We had the second time he was a finalist, we had a little issue because we thought his voice was going to change between the auditions. And we kind of had to keep him a boy soprano there for a while. But the voice has turned into this magnificent baritone voice. In fact, the youth finalists this year are just, I couldn't ask for any better for that. So they're going to be performing, and we are going to have a live event. We are going to ask people to mask up as they come into the Civic Auditorium. We are still selling tables for $750 for a table of 10, but balcony tickets are only $15 for adults and $5 for ages 12 and under. And they can get those tickets on our website. It's lcso.net. And so they can go to the Hoosier Star tab, and right there, the ticket availability to purchase tickets online will show up right there. They can also get tickets the night of the event if they wish to do that. This year, we're adding a pay-per-view option. As you guys know, last year, that's the only thing we could do was do a live stream because we couldn't even put the orchestra together because of the pandemic. Fortunately, we're able to put the orchestra together this year, masked up, of course, but playing. But for those people who cannot make it, they can still enjoy Hoosier Star and just access the pay-per-view option. That's $15 as well. So anyone that accesses the pay-per-view option will have the ability to vote online.
And that's excellent.
Doing this a little different this year is our voting is going to be electronic this year. We used to have these great big boxes with five different slots in them. And you put this little chit of paper, you know, in every slot. Well, finally come dragging into the 21st century. And we're going to be using smartphones now to do that. So we do encourage everybody to bring their smartphone to the concert as long as they keep it on silent for us. And we still know that there's going to be some people that don't have that capability. So we are going to have paper ballots for those people. And they're just going to need to give them to designated people who will then in turn put them into the phones. And so hopefully that process will go a lot quicker this year because that really kind of caused some drag time before. But we're excited about it.
I was excited when I read about your judges because I was very honored to be in the audience when James Neary, I think it was in 2016, won the adult, and to see him as a judge, it's sort of like full circle.
And what a great guy. You know, he's performing full time. He's just a tremendous guy. We've got Greta Friedman and then, of course, Lou Volker, who's the lead singer with Cripple Creek, who's very popular around here. So, yes, you're right. Thrilled with our judges this year, too.
Okay, well, that's Tim King from the Port County Symphony, and that's going to be Hoosier Star, September 11th, 7 p.m. at the Civic Auditorium. Tim, thank you for coming on Art of the Air Spotlight.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
Next, we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air. He has great off-Broadway writing credits, including The Accomplice, The Village, and several critically acclaimed interactive theatrical experiences produced by Neil Patrick Harris. But his newest musical, Night Tide, is coming to the Toll Theater, and that's going to be opening very soon. It's a world premiere musical that he wrote the book and lyrics for September 17 through 19, 24 through 26, and the 30th, October 1 through 3. And so you can find out information at the Toll Theater or Night Tide. themusical.com. Please welcome to Art of the Year, Taylor Tash.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Welcome.
So Taylor, our audiences would like to hear a little bit about our artistic people, their background. So tell us a little about yours, how you got from where you were to where you are now, where you grew up and everything else.
Well, I was raised in Las Vegas, Nevada. So I definitely was exposed to the performing arts, just kind of art and media in general from a very early age. My father worked as a stage technician on Broadway back in the early 80s. So he was always really adamant about exposing me to theater at a really early age. He tried to expose me to pretty much everything, but theater is really kind of what I have the most memories from. My dad loves to tell the story that, okay, so actually the first show that he ever took me to was Jesus Christ Superstar when I was 4 years old. And I didn't really get it. Like, I just assumed that back in Jesus' time, everybody sang everything. Like, I didn't understand the concept of a rock opera, but I thought it was really awesome. And I was like, oh, I wish I would have lived back then. That seems really cool to be able to, like, sing everything all the time. So then I started kind of getting the habit of just, like, singing requests to my parents. And they're kind of like, what are you doing? Stop doing that. But the story that my dad loves to tell is they took me to see Les Miserables, I think when I was like 7 or 8. And my dad always tells a story that about 15 minutes towards the end, I said to him, I was like, Daddy, now that everybody's dead, is it over yet? So I just, from a very early age, my father especially really kind of instilled, like, not necessarily a love so at first, but more so just like a knowledge of it and like a basis for it. But then once I got into high school, I, out of curiosity, I started taking theater classes, mostly because I had a crush on somebody who was in the theater classes. So I kind of wanted like to know that person better. But then it turned out that I actually kind of really enjoyed it. And I ended up being in like Guys and Dolls, and I played the Dick Van Dyke character in Bye Bye Birdie, you know, Albert. But also throughout my entire life, I've always been a writer. Like as soon as I could learn how to pick up a pencil and like learn how to write my name, I started writing stories. Like my first, I remember the first story I ever wrote was when I was like maybe 4 or 5 years old. I don't think it was four. Like I'm not like some, I wasn't like some kind of prodigy. I had to be like 5 or 6, like when I actually knew how to write. But I just wrote this like derivative story about the Addams Family. And then it just kind of snowballed from there, where I just always kind of felt compelled just to write stories. So when I got into high school and I started getting more into theater, I kind of decided to kind of combine the two, you know, my newfound love for theater and then my ultimate all-time, you know, lifelong passion for writing. And I started writing plays. I moved to New York when I was 19. But when I got here, I actually wasn't too thrilled with it, to be honest with you, because it just the theater scene was very kind of it just kind of seemed very like standoffish. It was almost good, but it makes sense that at the time they weren't gonna like open, you know, just like accept some snot-nosed 19-year-old with open arms. Like I had to kind of really work for it, you know. So but in the meantime, I was kind of saying like, oh, this is too corporate, this is too this or this is too that. So I started hanging out with crust punks in Bushwick and Lower East Side, and I kind of got my sea legs more in regards to other kind of music that wasn't necessarily theater oriented. So I got a lot more into like post-punk and the new wave and just a lot of indie music that was around at the time. But then theater just kind of always sort of kept kind of bringing me back to it. So my first job out of college was working as a telemarketer for the Roundabout Theater Company. Doing that, I became really good friends with this woman who was the associate producer of the show Accomplice. And then eventually I ended up working for them for a while as like a production assistant, but then I got pretty become good friends with the creator of that, and she wanted some new ideas of how to revamp one of their shows. And my friend who was the associate producer told her that I was a writer and I was interested in being a writer. So she asked me for some of my ideas for how they could kind of revamp the show, and end up using like 90% of my ideas. So that was pretty cool, because like I was able to say that I got my first off-Broadway writing credit at 25. And then pretty much ever since then, that's when I kind of decided like, you know what, this is what I've always wanted to be a writer since I was a kid. I've loved theater ever since I was a kid. Like, I think this is probably just the direction I need to go into. And then shortly after Accomplice opened, I met my collaborator, Nia, who first we would just write. I would write lyrics for her, and she would write music to the lyrics, and she'd perform them all over New York City, because she's also a singer-songwriter. And here's a little plug for her. Her debut single, I think, comes out like in 2 weeks. So, so at first we started out just doing kind of like open mic nights and stuff. But then eventually she asked me if I wanted to collaborate with her on a musical. And at first I was kind of hesitant, because I didn't really know if our aesthetics would really mesh all that well, because Nia's like really into fairy tales, and she's into Disney, you know, she's a mom, like she's very loving and very, you know, very like effervescent. When I've always been kind of more on the dark side of things, like I've always been really into true crime and horror movies and just like B movies and just like weird kind of.
Thanks, Sweeney Todd, for that, right?
Totally. So I always kind of say that my holy duality, it's not a trinity, my holy duality for musical theater is Little Shop of Horrors and Sweeney Todd, like, because those are the ones that are, you know, the more dark, like kind of the darker side. So luckily, like, so I was just trying to think to myself, like, all right, but what could we write together that would be something that would kind of combine our two aesthetics and our two, you know, like the things we're more passionate about. So Nia wanted to find like some kind of fairy tale to adapt. Like she's originally from Indonesia, so she wanted to maybe do some kind of Indonesian folktale. So she's kind of looking into that kind of realm. But then I was thinking, so then the light bulb went off, and I realized that a lot of these old 1950s and 1960s B movies are in the public domain because they were published on, or they're produced on such small budgets that they never bothered to copyright them. So I just started to kind of do some research and was looking at all the different B movies that were in the public domain. And then Night Tide immediately stood out to me because I just thought the title was really poetic. So, because on this list of all these other public domain B movies, they all have names like, you know, Attack of the Cockroach Monster. They all seem like, you know, really cheesy or just not all like something that wouldn't really lend itself well to theater. So on a whim, I watched Night Tide, and within like 15 minutes, I was like, oh my God, this is perfect for both of us, because, you know, it has that whole like fairy tale element that Nia really loves. It's about, you know, mermaids and it's about the beach and, you know, there's a love story involved, but then it also has that dark edge that I really look for because the mermaid might be killing people or, you know, like it's like, and it's got that kind of kitschy B movie kind of vibe to it. So we just kind of really hit the ground running with it. So within, we started writing it in January of 2015, by February of 2016, we were already doing the first stage reading of it. And then by summer of 2017, it was already on an off Broadway stage at the New York Musical Festival. So it was kind of this whirlwind experience that I couldn't be more grateful for. And now
with great reviews,
right? Great.
Yeah.
Reviews.
I mean, yeah, we did get some pretty good reviews. And we also did get some not so great reviews, but I actually really appreciated the not so great reviews, because those were the ones that, I mean, I kind of live by this saying that if you want to make something smooth, you got to rub it with sandpaper instead of velvet. So I really feel like that the bad reviews that we got kind of really made us think like, okay, so what do we have to do to fix this? Like, you know, this guy was right. Like there isn't like this, you know, it kind of lags right here in the middle, or like, you know, we're not really selling home the theme enough. So we really do feel like that the production that's going to be at the Toll Theater is the final draft of this project. Like our baby has grown up and now she's going to college. And
refined.
Yeah, so we're pretty stoked just that we even had this opportunity for the Toll Theater to further develop the project and to really make it this big shiny new object for people to enjoy, hopefully.
Will they videotape it,
the Toll production?
Yes.
I don't know, actually. I was actually going to reach out to Kevin about that this week, because unfortunately Nia is back in Jakarta and she's unable to come out for it because of all the COVID restrictions, because the Delta variant's unfortunately like really kind of striking Indonesia right now, so she isn't going to be able to get a chance to come. So I'm hoping that we can get a recording of it to send to her, at least get a recording of a couple of the numbers.
I think they told it some sort of pay-per-view during the height of the pandemic.
Yeah,
so that would be just a wonderful thing to offer.
Yeah, I'm going to reach out to them this week and find out more about that. Because I know that when they did the production of Daddy Long Legs back in the winter, that was all via Zoom. I guess they had like a really great turnout for that. So
how'd you hook up with the Toll?
So it was actually kind of completely out of the blue, to be honest with you. They sent us an email to our website in, I want to say, April or May of 2019. And they just said that they're a theater company that specializes in doing the regional theater debuts of new works. And they asked us to see our script and to hear our demos, and we sent them to them. And a couple months later, they were like, all right, we love this. We're producing this. And it was supposed to happen last July, but then obviously COVID happened, so they pushed it back to this upcoming September. And it's been really great. I mean, I've been in close contact with Kevin a lot, and he's been awesome. And it's been really exciting just seeing all the different little previews are doing and stuff, and just all the stuff that Jeff is posting and all the videos Jeff is making and stuff. So it's been amazing. Like, I mean, I haven't even seen the show, is still 2 weeks away, and I'm already just kind of on completely cloud nine. This has been such a wonderful experience, and I'm just so grateful to both of them, and so grateful to the Toll Theater overall. And I couldn't be happier, and I couldn't be more excited for this.
You know, how is you as a book writing the book for a show, when someone's directing your show and they're taking it some way, how's your reaction to that? Like, well, you know, I don't really think that's the right direction. Or do you feel that way? Do you think that opens new possibilities?
Well, one of my favorite parts about creating for theater is the collaborative aspect of it. And I really learned early on that one of the most important parts of playwriting or just kind of creating theater in general is to kill your darlings. So, I mean, I can be a little bit stubborn about it sometimes. Like, for example, one of my favorite songs in Night Tide was cut early on in the development process because, you know, the music director and the director of the Nymph production just realized that it wasn't really working and it didn't really work with the transitions and stuff. So they said, this has got to go. And as much as it hurt me to get rid of that song, I was kind of like, you know what? They're right. Like, you just got to do what's best for the project and what's best for the story. And you just can't hold it to you can't hold it. It can't be too precious to you. Like, you have to understand that once it's on the page, it's really kind of not up to the playwright anymore. Like, it becomes more in the hands of the director and the music director and the producers and the actors.
The whole creative team.
Exactly. So it's just, and I've heard horror stories about who've done some really amazing work, but then it never really goes there because they refuse to collaborate. Like, they refuse to they're way too guarded of their work, and they just don't understand that, like, you have to let go sometimes. You just have to do what's best for the project. Like, know that it is its own separate entity outside of yourself once it's on the page. You know, does that make sense?
Oh yeah, very much so.
Yeah,
if you read Bob Fosse biography that was written about him and about the production of Pippin and how Stephen Schwartz literally got locked out of the theater because Fosse because the original version of Pippin was let's say a little more pure. And Fosse, of course, Fosseized it quite a bit, you know, with the exotic dancing, which was actually what made it a hit. But he basically shut him out, locked him out of the theater. He says, you can't even be here. And that was his original piece way back when. So that's interesting. So what projects do you have coming down in the future? Do you have anything on the front burner yet?
Yeah, so we were actually commissioned to work with a world-renowned magician by the name of Lance Burton. He had this idea where something kind of dawned on him that magic hasn't been incorporated in musical theater in a very long time since Doug Henning did the Magic Show back in the 70s.
A Stephen Schwartz show, by ironically.
Exactly. So it seems to be one of the themes of this interview. So he got in touch with us, and we started talking actually shortly after the Toll got in touch with us. Lance Burton got in touch with us and just said that he wants to start developing something. So we've been developing something with him for the last 2 years that we are kind of almost done with. We're probably about two-thirds of the way done with that project. Actually, one of the first projects that Nia and I first started working on together is finally putting the finishing touches on that. That one's based on a true crime story that happened back in the early 90s. So that's one where, I mean, that's like Nia kind of, like, the Magic Show project is way up Nia's alley because it's got some, like, you know, kind of inspirational fantasy elements. So she's kind of, because we're working on such an inspirational kind of more, you know, family friendly project, she's indulging me by doing something super dark based on a true crime story. So we're keeping that going with finding ways of kind of balancing out both of our, you know, like, her light and my dark. So
so as a book writer, do you have you done straight plays also, or do you prefer working in musicals?
So I've written a couple of straight plays, but they haven't been produced or really seen anywhere. One thing that I would love to go back into doing eventually is interactive and immersive theater. Cause that's my, you know, my first show that got produced, Accomplice. That's, sort of like a mixture between, improv theater and a scavenger hunt, where the audience goes around to different locations around the West Village, trying to find this woman who's been kidnapped. And along the way there's actors, and they don't know who's part of it and who isn't. So like any bystander on the street or like any pedestrian could be in on the act. So I would really love to eventually get back into doing that kind of stuff. Like one project that, I mean, Nia and I have maybe about like five or six projects like in different stages of development right now. But one of the projects that we're going to start working on maybe around like next year, I would love to one day do a production of that in like a dead mall, like a mall that was built like in the 80s or early 90s that's now kind of,
oh my gosh, we have one right here in Michigan City, Marquette Mall. Perfect.
So we will maybe one day we will be mounting a production there. Like, I just want to do more stuff that is kind of more site specific or more immersive, more interactive, because I do think that outside of musical theater, I think that might be another place where my true passion might really lie as well. Like, I definitely want to get more into that eventually. So,
COVID's been, you talked a little bit about how that shut down productions for a while, but how's that affected you personally?
I have been doing pretty good, to be honest with you, because I've never stopped working, which is amazing, because my 9-to-5er, I work as a counselor at a program for homeless LGBT youth. So I'm considered an essential worker. So that was kind of like my real lifeline the past year and a half of just being able to show up to work every day and, you know, be there for my residents and kind of still be the strong, responsible adult. So it just, what I was grateful for about that was the fact that I was able to have something to really focus on. And also my projects kind of really got me through it as well. Like I was actually throughout COVID, I was able to really dive into one of my dream projects that Nia and I have been working on. So, you know, it's been challenging as it has for everybody in our own personal and various ways, but I just always try to accentuate the positive and just be grateful for the fact that, you know, I was able to keep my job and a lot of my friends stayed in town. So I kind of had my little pod, you know, we'd hang on each other's stoops and porches and stuff. So I'm glad the theater's happening again. Like I just went to go see a Broadway show last week and that was a pretty amazing experience. It was the first show that's opened since COVID's been a thing. So,
well, you know, we're about ready to wrap it up here. So we'd like to remind our audience, Night Tide with Books and Lyrics by Taylor Tash, who's our guest today. You can find information at nighttidethemusical.com. It's September 17th through 19th, 24th through the 26th, and 30th, October 1st through the 3rd. And those are generally Thursday through Sundays. You can find out information also at the Toll Theater. But thank you so much, Taylor, for coming on, sharing your journey for Night Tide and the musical. And, you know, like we always like to say to our theater people, break a leg.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure talking to you guys. And I will see you at the show in a couple weeks.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
Welcome to Art in the Air, formerly known as the Red Roots. This is a country music of three redhead identical triplet sister trio who are originally from Wade, Mississippi. They started making music in 2010 with their first studio album. They've been moving on since, and now they're getting some real play on TikTok. I guess they have like about 9 million tick things there. So they've changed the group to Taylor Red, and we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Nika Taylor, Natalie Taylor, and Nicole Taylor. Welcome to Art on the Air.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Welcome.
Well, we usually like to find out a little bit about our guests. So tell us a little bit about yourselves. Obviously, growing up together, that you know, you might have some overlap in the story. But tell us about your journey from where you are to where you are now. So how you grew up, where if you went to schools, college, things like that.
Yeah, we grew up around Wade, Mississippi area. And, you know, we started playing instruments at a young age, around probably, we loved music, I think at 5 years old, and started loving music. And my mom, she just has such a love for music like nobody I've ever seen, especially like instrumentation. She loves when like musicians, like some of her favorite groups play instruments and stuff like that. So we would jam out like in her, I remember jumping on her bed, jamming out to music together. Just literally like acting out music videos, like even when we were 5. And I remember Nicole going, I want to play the drums one day. And then I know my friend started playing piano, and I think that made me want to play piano when I was like around 7. And then Micah started the guitar, I think around 5. And her and my brother did like a duel. He played the guitar too. So like they did a duel, and she won the duel. It was a Yankee Doodle.
Did you have instruments around the house, or when you expressed the wanting to play drums, did you get a drum set then, or?
Until 5 years, because, you know, I asked my mom at 5 years old if I could play the drums, and I was inspired by Shania Twain's drummer. He wore like these ski goggles when he played the drums, and I was just like, that looked like a fun job. Like, I want to do that, and I want to wear crazy like ski goggles.
But
when
she
does
things,
even though I don't do that. Anyways, I was 5 years old. And then so my mom, you know, being in the South, you know, a lot of girls didn't play the drums. So my mom was like, you know, normally girls don't play drums, at least where we're from. And obviously she was a big fan of the Mandrell sisters. So I had to kind of show her that down the road. Like, yeah, I don't know why she, I don't know why she said it. Cause she was like a big into like mandrills and all that. But anyways, long story short, around 5 years old, I got to,
10 years old.
Around, sorry, 10 years old, 5 years later. She finally was the one, you know, taking me to drum lessons. So I pick up the drums.
But before that, you're being on pots and pans. I think she was making sure we were serious because my brother, he picked up the guitar and he wasn't serious. He just like, you know, just banged on it and stuff. So I think she was just wondering how serious we were. And drums is a big commitment.
Yeah.
When somebody says, I want to play drums, that's a big commitment.
And I have to say, loud. We had a kind of like a small house with like, it was like, so my drum set was an acoustic drum set and I would practice for like 5 hours a day. So
practice.
And my parents are literally the best and the most encouraging.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they listened to probably hundreds of hours of really loud, banging, crappy drumming.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And anyway, so I guess around 13 or 14, around 11, we started our band. I was on the drums. Natalie was on the piano. Mike was on the guitar. And I guess around
playing the songs together.
Yeah, playing a song together. Because my mom was like, well, we didn't really plan to be in a band. My mom was just like, you know, you play the drums, you play the piano, and you play the guitar. So why don't y'all just make a song and put it together? It wasn't anything like we just started doing that. And then people in the community started supporting us. And my parents said, if you get 3 gigs in a month, we'll get you a trailer where you don't have to like throw the instruments in the back of the truck. You know, it's kind of we throw like keyboards, drums, all in the back of like a pickup truck type thing. So
yeah, so they were super supportive.
And yeah, super supportive. Like they were the ones helped carrying our instruments and taking us to lessons. And like from then on, you know, just like not even nothing. And they ran their own small business. So I don't know how, honestly don't know how they did it.
And have triplets and a son.
A son as well.
4 kids and a small business. And taking us to music lessons. If we were playing that month, they said that if you get 3 or 4 gigs a month, I can't remember what it was, we'll get you a trailer. Like that month, we got that amount of gigs. So like around 12 years old, we were traveling around like a trailer and playing gigs and stuff. And so 13, we picked up the more grassy instruments. We were inspired by the Chicks. They, it was
a banjo,
yes, the
banjo,
fiddle, the mandolin. And so at the time, at the gigs we were playing, we'd play like half country. So well, it's more bluegrass probably at the time. And then half like more like rockier stuff. I don't know, a
chop rock.
Yeah, pop rock or something. So it was like half our audience didn't like this half and the other half like that half. So it was so funny. It was, I don't even want to know what was going on there. But it was really fun. And I think it allowed us to like figure out what we wanted to do, because if you can do some different things, you can kind of like experiment. And so it's kind of like merged into what we are today. It's more of like a pop country vibe and everything. So Nicole plays the banjo, but she's like a drummer at heart with that banjo. She's like rocking.
Well, the banjo is a drum essentially with strings on it. So
It actually originated like it has a lot of drum and rhythmic roots, and the way you play it is very rhythmic. But I know by the time we were 16, like our community was really supportive of us in general, like playing music and stuff. And, you know, we got to like learn, you know, on the coast and learn how to, you know, play in front of an audience and all that kind of fun stuff. And, you know, by the time we were 16 years old, we were playing around 100 gigs a year.
And going to public school.
And we graduated public school. Natalie was our valedictorian. So I don't know how. Natalie's just an overachiever in general. But I was not the valedictorian. I was not in any Torian thing. But,
me neither. You were closer to me. I was like way back there.
But anyways, we had a ball and just a lot of community support, a lot of family support. So, you know, kind of like they say, it takes a village. So that's pretty much the gist.
Well, we want to set up your first song that we're going to play here. So tell us a little bit about that. That's going to be Bringing Country Back. Tell us a little bit about that, and we'll take a listen to that.
I think just, you know, being from South Mississippi, and even when we moved to Nashville, we felt like a little bit like everybody would always say, like, where are you from? And we're like, oh, my goodness, like, we're still in the South. Why are people asking us
where
about
are you from
accent?
Means you sound super country.
Yeah, and so, like, that's what we feel like our theme song in life is, like, we're bringing country back. Like, it's, like, kind of like bringing sexy back. Like, it's coming back for good. And so we're going to help blaze the trail for that.
Just being who you are, I think, is the message. Because, like they said, you know, moving to Nashville, it's, like, kind of a melting pot, you know. And we thought we were going to fit in, like, super, like, just like a glove. And we realized most people there weren't super like from the South like us. And so we were like, you know, things are going to change. And, you know, in general in life, we want to stick to who we are. Cause we tried to be, you know, like what you were talking about earlier, we tried all different styles and we just feel like country was the best. So.
Well, let's take a listen to it. Here is Bringing Country Back, Taylor Redd.
Sally's still the queen, so I crank her up on blast. Got a porch swing, don't need a yoga mat. I trade some Jimmy Choo's for my toes in the grass. I'm bringing country back, I'm bringing country back. Like a boy tough enough to shake my daddy's hand, as rough around the edges as he is a gentleman who drives a dirty diesel 8-1-4 Cadillacs. I'm bringing country back, I'm bringing country back.
Taylor Red, bringing country back. A lot of fun and actually kind of a mission statement there for your group.
That's true. So I'm curious about your writing process. How does it work between the three of you? I'm sure it varies just like anything, but what's your process generally?
I would say our first process, usually we find like a hook or some kind of concept we want to write about that we're all three excited about. Which sometimes that takes a lot. Just to, if we all three like it, we think it's gonna do okay. We're gonna like this song. So that's a lot to get 2 out of 3 to like something. But once we like our hook, we usually either if we can think of like a melody, which I mostly do like the melody parts. They contribute to that as well. But I usually start the melody, and then they throw down a bunch of lines. They're the lyric people for the most part. And we kind of build from there. So it's kind of nice to have people throwing out lyrics, and then I can try to put a melody to it and then see how we feel about the song. But we do like writing to like a drum beat too. Like it usually pops in like some kind of like loop or something. And we try to write more of like rhythmic phrasings. We love kind of like making it like cool and fresh and fun and also keeping it country. But we have those like country lifestyle lyrics that we kind of grew up on that we like as well. So, we try to put aim for that kind of message.
It's like our little nuggets, Mississippi nuggets. It's like, if you're from South Mississippi, you'll get whatever this is in this song.
And if you're not, you can live it through our music.
So. Yeah, you can escape into our crazy world. So
with your tour schedule and opening for people, do you find mentors along the way? Have they, like, who has been your guides and who have inspired you and to, you know, because you want to keep moving forward and learning. So who are some of those people?
I would say my mentor is definitely, I know this is crazy to say, but my parents, even though they're not traveling musicians, they're small business owners and they work really, really hard. Because I know that we played around 1,000 shows in our career and we've only canceled one show because we were like broke down on the side of the road, and just the work ethic that they instilled into us is really hard to keep up with. I'll never understand how they survived and been such great people in the process of traveling. Even when we were younger, they traveled with us and stuff like that. And they were always like, you know, keep your word, treat people good, be gracious to people that are hosting you, be thankful for what you have and work really, really hard, and it's going to pay off
So we never take that for granted.
Beautiful.
So you talked a little bit about earlier in the connection to the, and I call it the earlier Dixie Chicks. So is that kind of also an inspiration or a kind of a collective there? This mission? I remember when I was working actually at the other theater in Munster, we had the earlier Dixie Chicks before Natalie Maines. So their sound was somewhat different back then.
We just remember seeing them like on CMT, like Goodbye Earl, like their, I guess their actual that stage with Natalie Maines, like the music videos and stuff, because we'd kind of like reenact them with like bandana, like wear the bandana shirts, like one of their music videos, and we did like live, yeah, reenacted their music videos. Yeah, we were definitely inspired by, you know, them, and I love how the two sisters like have like instrumentation as well. And you know, once we figured out about them, you figured out they were like in a kind of a bluegrassy group growing up in Texas, which is really super cool, which shows off their like musician extreme talent and all that. So
what's inspiring to me is the skills. Obviously we listen to a ton of different awesome people growing up, you know, other than just the Chicks. But you know, the Chicks had this thing where they were playing instruments, and you know, a lot of people are building more vocal skills as well, and they had the vocal skills, but they also had that extra little band thing, you know. And I feel like it's when you listen to pop music, a lot of it's just centered around, you know, vocals or whatever it is, but to have that actual music where it's not coming from a CD or it's not coming from MP3 player, it's coming from somebody, you know, and their instrument, you know, that was attractive to me, to play the music versus playing a button, you know what I'm saying? And so at a young age, to see women doing that,
and they were hot, come on,
they were gorgeous.
They made the banjo sexy and made the fiddle sexy. Yeah, like they're like the only ones.
Totally. Yeah, but to see women with the skills that they had in so many different ways, and a team, you know, kind of effort, you know, they're doing this, they're doing this, Natalie's doing this. I think that was inspiring to see women doing that.
Well, I want to talk about your next song, and I wonder if this is kind of a hope for the type of a man you are looking in your life, Fresh Off the Farm. Set that up for us, and then let's take a listen to it.
Yeah. I mean, us three don't really, we're so different on everything, even though we are triplets, but we all like our country boys. I mean, you cannot beat a guy in a cowboy hat and six-pack abs. So that was my inspiration for writing the song.
So if you're interested in doing that, listen to what Taylor Redd has advice for you. Fresh Off the Farm, also available on a YouTube video.
I'm a vegan. I'm a hippie. Even though I'm from the bottom of Mississippi, like a real 100% no preservatives, all organic. Yeah, I got a type. Wait, we're talking about boys, right? The ones that get you singing E-I-E-I-O. Raised down yonder where the wild things grow. Homegrown, down to earth. Looks good in jeans and a Hanes t-shirt. Ain't been city by tainted from the outside. FFA certified, no I can't lie.
Okay, that's your advice. Taylor Redd, fresh off the farm, if you're looking for that special country boy there. So, so tell us what you guys are looking forward to doing. First of all, tell us your tour schedule. We know the big thing coming up is locally here on September 15th, Lakeshore Community Concert at the Munster High School Auditorium, my old stomping grounds where I managed that place for a long time. You're doing there, but you have a whole schedule starting just a day before that.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
Totally. We're so excited. Yeah, we got a lot of dates coming in for the spring, I mean, for the fall and then next spring. We're super pumped, and we're adding more to the calendar, so stay tuned. And you know,
yeah, and it'll be so great. A lot of our people on social media are like, oh, I can see y'all, you know, in person, and it's so sweet. Like, we cannot wait to meet some of these people that have been supporting us. Like, our TikTok kind of blew up just like a year and a half ago, so this is like all new to us. Like, we've been playing gigs all of our life and stuff, and we've had some social media followers, but it's really cool to be able to kind of experience this tour as the first time of having like 9 million TikTok followers and like getting to see the people that support us on the road and see them face to face. We've actually, a lot of them actually like flew or drove in to one of our most recent concerts, and a lot of those people have been following us since we had like 30,000 followers on TikTok. So we call them like our TR army. And those are the people that are like the biggest fans. Like, they're always on our lives and stuff. And like, we know a lot about them personally because they've even co-hosted our live, and like, they
tattoos
on Instagram.
Tattoo, the TR army has, there's a tattoo out there with add Taylor Redd music on
or
it.
Or like, they want to post hardcore in their room. Those kind of people, like, we're just so appreciative to get to meet them in person and thank them in person.
We can't wait for following us.
We've already met some of them.
Yeah. And
we can't wait to meet more. But, we owe them so much. They've been so good to us.
And, you're the best.
And it's usually if they're a TR Army member, like, we've seen their name like tons of times, like either like on comments, on Facebook, on Instagram, they're like on all platforms. And so I feel like it's so different, like, when you get to see the person in person, you know, versus like
instead of having virtual fans, it will feel more like real audience, you know. And obviously they're more, you know, I feel like our fans are more like our friends because they're so supportive and they're why we're here.
And I hope live entertainment's been treating you well. I know Laura Anderson from there, worked with her for years, so I hope live entertainment.
Oh, yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah,
they're amazing.
Shout out to Laura Anderson, great person. Has COVID impacted you guys in any way? How has it? I mean, touring schedule probably last year was pretty close to nil, but obviously this year you're out on the road.
Yeah, I would say the initial reason it affected us back in March when it originally hit last year was us getting on TikTok and actually pursuing it, because our first time to ever post anything was in January, but we didn't really pursue it. So we just kind of posted once and was like, okay, we're on TikTok. But then March, since everything kind of shut down, we started posting a lot. And so that, you know, kind of like helped us get our music out there more than we could have, you know, without TikTok. So we're thankful for that. And then now, you know, people are touring again. So we're excited to get back on the road this year.
Yeah, totally. And COVID, you know, was such a like kind of like negative time for everybody. And we were definitely blessed to be able to kind of grow a social media following during that time. And maybe, you know, our music being able to play in person, watch, you know, encourage people and hopefully bring, you know, a brighter light to those people that, you know, had such a terrible time. And we're excited to like see people in person. Like, we love the virtual thing, but I think it's like really kind of like keeps people pumped when like they come see you live and stuff like that, instead of just
keeps
like
us pumped.
It keeps us pumped because I love going to concerts. When we would like be really passionate about somebody, we'd go to like five of their concerts, so we know like that feeling of like being, you know, at a concert and just being pumped about the group and everything. So we're so appreciative of anybody that would drive, you know, people were driving 5 hours or 3 hours or flying or whatever. That means so much to us that they give time out of their day and schedule and just do something, you know, that's not about them and they're to support us. So we're so appreciative.
Yeah. And so thankful to all the venues booking us. We're so pumped about that. And so they were so gracious to us. And we thank y'all so much for doing this interview and hosting. You were saying that you've actually hosted, been a part of, you know, booking groups and stuff like that. So we appreciate people like you, you know, letting us come to y'all's place. So,
and I want to encourage too, like, build these connections, you know. Like, I know I feel like with the pandemic, one thing it feels like it's stolen from a lot of people was these personal connections. And I feel like the concerts are bringing that back, these personal connections and us being able to connect with people and other people being able to connect with us and
all that, you know what I'm saying? I think that just the isolation and stuff is so hard, you know, for a lot of people.
Real quick, with a tour schedule like you guys have, do you have time for a personal life? You're looking for that country boy?
I guess we could make more time, definitely between social media. I feel like we have like 3 jobs, like full-time jobs, but I'm not complaining. We're so grateful, but trying to keep your music up, writing, social media.
We're bad girlfriends.
Yeah, we're the worst girlfriends ever. So they have to be like
they have to like have really low standards for girlfriends, I guess, maybe. I guess I'll speak for myself.
And I'm sure there's so many great, perfect guys out there. We're just looking, I guess, trying to find that one for us. You know, and like we're willing to wait, make time, yeah, for one for each of us. Nobody took it like that. That's weird. But the guy, you know, he's worth, I guess, slowing down your schedule for. So I'm sure he's out there somewhere.
Somewhere, yeah.
He's tough. Y'all may not be looking, but I got my eye out for him.
Yeah. He's got to be super tough because he's got to, you know, be grilled by 2 other people. So.
You sing that fresh off of the farm in your concerts, and that will be that. Well, we'd like to thank you for coming on Art on the Air. That's Taylor Redd from Wade, Mississippi, originally, now currently, I think, in Tennessee, Nashville, actually. The red-haired triplet sisters, they've been performing for over 10 years, actually, professionally, and even prior to that. Nika, Natalie, and Nicole bring up the whole thing. And we're going to listen to this one last song here before we sign off, as we sign off, and tell us a little bit about Country Money.
Country Money is our latest single. And we're so excited. This one got picked up on some major Spotify playlists, country playlists, Wild Country. I think it's like New Music Nashville, stuff like
People
that.
Magazine.
People Magazine like, featured it for how it kind of like united, I guess, with our TikTok following and it blowing up on Spotify as well. So we're super blessed.
I think it has like a super positive message, like, you know, be grateful for the simple things. You know, a lot of people, you know, they may not have much, but they're rich and maybe they don't even know it, you know.
Well, we're going to take a listen to that. By the way, you can find TaylorRedMusic.com online. They're on Spotify, Instagram, and check out some of their videos of all the other covers they do. It's a great thing. Thank you for being on Art on the Air, and here is our final song with them, Country Money.
Thank you.
Let's go. Don't grow on trees. Never threw a blanket down, laid it underneath. I felt the breeze with a homegrown boy with his sleeves rolled up, looking at you like he's all in love. The shade show feeling like a million bucks out here, got all you ever need. A gold fried chicken popping in that pan, sugar at the bottom of a feel good tray. Charlie Daniels band, stars on the river, let's take it to the bank. Like sun sitting on a keel, don't you love how it feels? Rocking like a Rockefeller with you, honey. Baby, we're rich on country money. A silver hook hanging on a catfish mouth. Boy, I'm wrapped around your finger like a wrap around a porch when it's pouring, and we're back porching. Windmills spinning like the wheel of fortune. Cold fried chicken popping in that pan, sugar at the bottom of a feel-good drink. Side door speaker, Charlie Daniels band, stars on the river, let's take it to the bank. Like sun sitting on a keel, don't you love how it feels? Rocking like a Rockefeller with you, honey. Baby, we're rich on country money. Love how it feels, rocking like a Rockefeller with you, honey. Baby, we're rich. A gold fried chicken popping in that pan, sugar at the bottom of a feel good tray. Side door speaker, Charlie Daniels band, stars on the river, let's take it to the bank. Like a sun sitting on a heel, don't you love how it feels? Rocking like a Rockefeller with. Baby, we're rich on country money.
You've been listening to Art in the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art in the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP. Art in the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP Station Manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Our theme music is by Billy Foster, with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. Underwriters for Art in the Air, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary LeVan, Arts Patron. Art in the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there. So don't just be an Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world.